Hey guys, and welcome to the show. I've got Ryan Berry back with us, and he's going to talk to us about Azure again. And I know we've done several Azure shows in the past, but the thing that I think that's always been missing is, how do I actually use Azure in my environment? How is it useful in my environment? And so those are the questions, or that's the main question that we're going to get Ryan to answer for us today. So without further ado, play the music. Ryan, how you doing, bud?
I'm doing well. How are you? It's been a couple months now.
It has, yeah. And the Azure episodes that we did really kind of went through the roof. So I really wanted to have you back and have you talk about, you know, how to use Azure in your day-to-day operations.
Absolutely.
You know, how it integrates with your corporate network, et cetera. And so I hear you've got some cool stuff for us.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you know, Azure is... I know we talked about this before, it's such a broad topic. There's 40 some odd products that are actually underneath that umbrella. So we'll talk a little bit about the infrastructure as a service capabilities and networking and how we can kind of, how a business rather, a customer, could actually leverage some of those capabilities to their benefit.
Absolutely. And so I think you've got a lab set up and you've got some demos or some examples that you want to show us.
Yeah, absolutely. Number of ways customers can actually use Azure to extend their network into the cloud, and we've talked about that in the past. But you know, some customers I've spoken to are actually interested in just running everything in the cloud, you know, being born in the cloud, in other words. And you know, customers are you know, certainly able to use Azure to that capacity. And again, speaking to the infrastructure as a service capabilities of Azure, there's a number of different components that customers can use to be able to facilitate this sort of, you know, workload hosting capability of Azure. You know, so specifically, you know, we talked in the past around using, you know, VMs in Azure, and then we have some capabilities in Azure called site-to-site VPN. And what this allows you to do is take a network on in your own data center and attach it to a network that you've configured in Azure. So the benefit being that if you have users in a corporate office or corporate environment, they're able to actually address the servers that are running in Azure as if they're running in your own data center. So it's you know, aside from, you know, maybe some latency over the connection link that you're using, you know, if you have a lighter weight connection to the internet that VPN rides on top of, you know, there might be a little bit of latency to the users making use of that. Aside from that, you know, to an end user, it would be transparent. You know, the networking number or network numbering would be the same, and so forth. But you know, getting back to the born in the cloud comment, you know, some customers want to just run everything in the cloud. And I've spoken to a number of customers who, you know, have eliminated, you know, the making use of data center hosting facilities to actually house all of the servers needed for, you know, their production enterprise workloads. And if in this particular example, what I'm highlighting is that I actually have, and I'll show here in a little bit, I actually have this set up in my lab. I have servers deployed in the South Central U.S. and into the East U.S. And you could always do this historically, but some fairly, you know, maybe 8-9 month old feature and capability in Azure is to make use of the site-to-site VPN to not just connect your own network into Azure, but to connect Azure networks together. So in this example, I actually have two IP subnets, this 10.10, it's actually that 0.0, it's a 24-bit subnet, and as well as a 10.11, 0.0, so in South Central and in East. And I'm connecting them together through VPN, through site-to-site VPN. And deployed into one of them, the South Central data center, I actually have a directory controller. And I have a server sitting in the East U.S. that's actually part of that domain, or in other words, it's a domain joined server. So you know, these servers can actually talk to each other using our Azure network. So it's a very high speed network, and I'll show you know, illustrate an example of that where I can actually copy a fairly large file from one of these servers to another. And you know, taking this a little bit farther. You know, one of the other cool things you can do with this is you know, if a customer wanted to eliminate or remove all of their data center facilities, into the physical plant facilities that they actually house servers in or use to store their servers in, customers can actually allow their mobile users to punch into this network and actually, become part of that network as well. So I actually have that set up, and I'll show how I can connect from my laptop and actually participate in this network and actually address and access servers but running both in the South data center as well as in the East data center as if I was actually just, sitting on that network. And this is basically a data center entirely hosted in the cloud.
Yeah, so all of their infrastructure is in the cloud.
Yes, that's exactly right. And there's a number of situations maybe customers would be interested in doing this. I mean, if you think about it, for disaster recovery or business continuity reasons, if a customer was relying on a singular physical geography and something really bad happened in that geography, we always encourage customers to have contingency plans in place to be able to allow them to spin up those workloads in another data center. But in this illustration, we basically have a sort of active-active configuration. I can actually deploy web servers into each data center and actually load balance traffic between them. So there's a number of things I can use this configuration for to be able to insulate myself from faults.
That's pretty cool. So you can load balance between the two data centers?
Yeah. There's some features in Azure. I can do that myself just by using round robin DNS and setting that up myself if I so desired. But there's also some features called Azure Traffic Manager. And what that actually allows you to do is depend when you actually accept a connection, maybe HTTP or web traffic, depending on where that user's from, we can actually route that to a data center that is most responsive. So it's not always the one that's closest to the user. So it's actually an intelligent load balancer that, let's say the South Central data center, something catastrophic happens there. And we have a user coming in from the Texas region, so South Central would be close to them. But if that data center is inaccessible, then Traffic Manager would be intelligent enough to route that traffic to the other configured location. So it's some capability in Azure that does all of that transparent to both the user, and once it's configured, it's pretty seamless to the customer.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So if we had like some sort of networking issue in Site A, Traffic Manager would then route everything to Site B as well?
Yes, yeah. And some customers I've spoken to, they might have a workload that doesn't work in an active-active situation, or they might have so much data to replicate that, introduces some problems, or they don't want to run into a situation if you get routed to another data center. Maybe there's transactions, maybe database transactions that aren't yet committed in the other location. So I've actually seen customers set up a shim or a shell of a website that basically says, our application is offline. And they actually use that as a secondary site in Traffic Manager. So if the primary site goes offline for whatever reason, the users are actually funneled to a site that actually responds. So instead of actually going nowhere, they at least get a message saying, something's wrong, we'll be up momentarily. So there are a lot of different creative ways that you can use that.
That's cool.
So the final thing I'll show you is what I actually alluded to a little bit ago. And this is actually, what a lot of customers that I talk to tend to do in the hybrid world, where they have some, networking infrastructure or physical infrastructure in their own data center, or maybe multiple data centers that they own. They can actually connect that up using site-to-site VPN, so some sort of device or appliance that actually connects up into that site-to-site configured tunnel and just sitting in Azure. And once that connection is established, any of these users sitting over here in the HQ side can actually access resources on the right-hand side, again, as if they were sitting, as if these servers, rather, were sitting in this particular, in the data center in the orange. We also have some, in lieu of using VPN tunnels, there's another thing that customers can use that we talked about earlier in another show called ExpressRoute, where a customer can actually have a tunnel or a pipe that they actually purchase with guaranteed bandwidth up to 10 gigabits in size that this traffic would actually ride over. So instead of depending on devices, in this case, this might be a point of failure, the site-to-site VPN device. If something happens to that, power supply goes out, that's critical or weakest link. But with ExpressRoute, that's actually a private circuit that the customer would actually have directly into basically one of our core routers in our data centers to be able to access these resources over a dedicated very high speed pipe without going over the public internet.
Cool. That's pretty cool.
All right, Lex. So what I have here are what we call virtual networks in Azure. So this is actually where you set up and establish the IP address and IP addressing schemes, as well as subnets, as well as what we call the gateways. This is actually the endpoint in which we're going to use to connect our two clouds together, basically. So in here, this is actually running in the East U.S. data center. And you can see that this is actually connected to our South Central data center. So it's showing with a green connection that these two data centers are in fact connected. And then when I showed earlier, I'll demo it in a bit here, this is actually what we call a point-to-site VPN. This is actually where I can connect from my laptop and become part of this network. And it shows that nobody's connected at the moment and actually access any of these resources running in either of these data centers as if they were running in a data center that I was connected to on my local area network.
Yeah, back up just a second. So that's an important point, right? From a client perspective, these are just other data centers, right? A large corporation may have multiple data centers out there today, right? That really doesn't change a whole lot in the way that they configure things, play with things, set things up. It's all exactly the same from a administration standpoint.
Absolutely. In fact, these clients could be domain joined. I actually would very likely be domain joined. So when they punch in, file shares, they could actually print to local printers that are in different facilities or offices they might be traveling to. So it truly is just building a complete network, no different than one would have, in their own in their own offices. But in this case, all of the infrastructure supporting this is 100% hosted in Azure.
Well, the cool thing is, it's like you're configuring this on a website, so it's essentially like drawing a network out in Visio and having it magically come to life.
There's some steps you have to take before that, but it actually is depicting it here, in a diagram like manner to kind of show how everything's talking and connected, and as well as a status.
Yeah, pretty cool.
Yeah. So in here, some of the things I had done beforehand, and this is actually some of the time consuming components, but in here I actually have let me scroll down here a bit. So this is actually a virtual network that I built in the East data center, so the 10.11 network. You see it's I have 65,000, a pool of 65,000 IP addresses, and I subnetted that out into a smaller subdivision that actually gives me 251 addresses. There's a couple IP addresses that are reserved in Azure, so the network numbering starts at .4 when you actually create a subnet. So any VM that I bring online will actually be auto-assigned an IP address at .4. And this is actually something that gets confusing to customers that are used to assigning an IP address to a VM in Azure, is that they want to actually do that themselves. They want to actually put in 10.11.0.4 on a VM that they stand up. But if something happens to this virtual network infrastructure and that VM gets rebooted, we want to be able to access that virtual machine even if something happens to this virtual network. So we need to always make sure the customers keep the network card on obtain IP address automatically. And we'll show when I walk through the VM configuration, they're actually set up to have a persistent IP address. So I can actually tell it I always want it to get 10.11.0.4. I'd want to do that on domain controller as an example.
Yeah.
So just some caveats or things that we should point out to the users. So then what I've done here I have the South Central VNet. So this is the one running in somewhere in Texas. And you can see it's a 10.10 network, and they're configured similarly. And what I have configured here on both of them is I had the site-to-site connectivity checkbox checked. You can see the central is pointing to east, and east is pointing to central. So the two are aware and know about one another. So that the final piece of the puzzle, once the two networks are aware of one another, is I actually have to, if I go back to the dashboard here, I have to actually create a gateway that actually allows the two to connect to each other. So normally, if you had a VPN device in your own data center that you wanted to connect to Azure, that VPN device would be, you know, on some public internet, you know, that would have an IP address that would be accessible from Azure, or addressable from Azure back to your data center. But in this case,
just an address that's accessible on the internet.
Yeah, exactly. But in this case, because everything is in Azure, I need Azure to give me an IP address, this gateway IP address. So I'm using that to actually allow the two to connect to one another. So this is the IP address in the east, and this is the gateway IP address that the South Central has. So basically, the two networks are talking to one another across that IP address.
Yeah. So it generates that automatically?
Yeah, yep. So that's the final step when I actually, after I build my networks, configure them, make them aware of one another, I need to actually have Azure generate what we call a dynamic gateway. So I actually have to create one of those guys in each one of those. And then the final thing that's a little bit tricky for being able to make these two things start talking is that normally, again, if you have a network in your own data center that you want to connect to Azure, you have a key to be able to prevent me, for example, from connecting to a network that you set up, on your VPN device. So, but because this all is in Azure, I need to make these two networks have the same, or these two gateways have the same keys. So you see down here it says manage key, mm-hmm. And there's going to be a really lengthy looking bunch of gibberish here. So there is a PowerShell command that we'll point to in the show notes that you'd actually have to run on both of these networks to actually make them be able to have the same key so they can establish a connection. So my South Central VNet has this key, and my East VNet has the same key, so the two gateways can talk to one another.
So that key, so does the key identify the networks that are connected, or is it just something that we use to authenticate against each other?
It's more of an authentication mechanism. So, you know, like in my example, I was talking about preventing, if you set up a VPN device and I happen to know, or a VPN, a site-to-site VPN network in Azure, and I happen to know your gateway IP, it prevents me from connecting to you because I don't have that big key, you know, the encryption key, basically, to be able to punch in.
Yeah.
So that's sort of the keys to the kingdom, if you will. But because all of this is running in Azure, I have to... I don't have a VPN device that I'm connecting. I have to make Azure be able to, accept that key on both sides.
I gotcha.
Yep.
Okay.
So once I've configured all of that up, so that's just the network plumbing. So now you think about, racks of network gear and routers and whatnot that would be required to have been configured to be able to make these two, completely different network, they're different network numbering schemes even, be able to talk to each other. I've done all of that through a website. So then I have these virtual machines, and I'm actually going to switch over to the new portal. So this is actually the current Azure portal. We have a new portal that customers can use to manage things. And I'm going to highlight this portal because this is actually where some of the new capabilities are that allow you to do things like wiring up persistent IP addresses and that sort of thing. So this is actually my virtual machine is running in the South Central data center, and this happens to be my directory controller. You can see from the name South Central DC1 is what I named it. And if I go here to IP addresses, this is where I was talking about earlier where customers... building things in a cloud or building networks in a cloud is different, where customers don't go to the network interface configuration of the VM and tell state the IP address they want that machine to have. So normally, when you create a virtual machine in Azure, it actually gets dynamic IP address, so it's not guaranteed to be the same. And it's sort of a reservation, so it should be the same as long as if I shut this machine down and provision another VM, the other VM might actually get the IP address that this thing has, and I don't want that to happen. So that's what this static flag is for. So when I click static, I can actually tell it, after I click static, I tell it what subnet I want to actually pick the IP address from. And I tell it the IP address I want this machine to have. So this machine, every time it comes up, there's basically creating a DHCP reservation for it with 10.10.0.10. So that's the that will always be the IP address of my directory controller.
Cool.
Let me go ahead and bounce over to the directory controller. So this is actually, I'm now sitting on the directory controller. So this is a 10.10.0.10 IP address. So if I actually go to the network configuration and go here to Ethernet and properties and IPv4, you can see I have obtain IP address automatically checked, and I have the DNS actually, because this is a directory controller, I have it pointing to itself.
Yeah.
And so somewhere on here I thought I should actually have desktop wallpaper that actually show. I'm just going to go ahead and just do a IP config, so you can see the 10.10.0.10. So even though I have obtained IP address automatically, because I've configured that in the portal, this machine will always get that IP address.
Okay.
All right. So now that I'm essentially punched into this particular virtual machine, I'm going to show you. I'm going to actually go here to back to their portal, and this is the server I have running in the East data center. I'll just call it East VM1. And if you look, this machine has an IP address of 10.11.0.4. So I have two private networks, and normally, these machines would be in a completely disconnected environment. This machine would basically be standalone. The one in South Central would be standalone, but I want them to be able to talk. So
sure.
If I go back, if I go back to my directory controller. I'm just going to prove to you that I'm actually able to access it by that private IP address. So this is the IP address of that machine, that East VM1, and I'm on the directory controller in South Central. So I'm actually going to connect to the East Data Center by its private IP address. When I hit connect, I get prompted for credentials, and lo and behold, I'm actually on this server using its private IP address. So, so a lot of customers are very security conscious. They don't want to open RDP ports or, file or SMB, ports on the public internet to be able to access these server resources. So I could basically completely lock down this machine and only allow it to be accessed on my private network. And, it would be a server no different than a customer would have in their own data center. So I have this, I'm remote desktop into that server, and I also have a share set up in that server. So this is actually my the server that I have running in South Central, and I'm connected to the one that's running in the East. And I'm on the share, and you can see that there's nothing currently in that folder. And I have a file that I made beforehand. It's 125 megs in size. So I have it local on the one in South Central. And I'm actually going to copy this guy to the to the server that's actually running in the East. And you can see that I get some pretty good network throughput, 10, 11, 12 megabytes a second. So it's actually very quickly copying this file. So this is actually using that site-to-site VPN connection and the private IP address to actually connect these to copy this file.
And that was really good throughput because that was SMB.
Yes, yep. Yeah, if I actually had SMB ports opened up on a server, which I don't think I would advise any customer to do that, it would actually be using my, I'm working from home today, my Comcast connection to actually copy that over, and I wouldn't get, anywhere near that sort of sustained throughput. So this is just Azure infrastructure to Azure infrastructure connectivity.
Wow, that's pretty good.
Yeah. So now, I've got this network set up. This machine here, the East VM, this machine is actually, domain join. And here's the Active Directory users and computers. So I can see here's the machine I'm connected to, South Central DC1. And here's the East VM. So this is actually the directory controller for that other machine. In fact, I actually logged on when I went to remote desktop to prove that I was connecting by the private address. I was actually using this cloud test. .com directory. I might not have seen that because I did it very quickly, but you know, these machines are in fact participating in a network just like, you know, a customer's data center. So now we have all of this stuff connected. You know, one thing that customers may want to do is allow the remote users or maybe branch offices the ability to connect all this infrastructure. So now we've, you know, eliminated the need for us to have servers, you know, sitting in a back room and paying for power and cooling and, you know, some IT guy to, you know, manage and configure all the routers and switches needed to make happen what I just showed. So the final thing that we can show here is that on my machine here, I'm actually going to VPN. So this is actually that point-to-site VPN that I talked about earlier. when you set up point-to-site VPN, there's a client you can download. Now, I'll show you that in the portal to be able to configure any machine that you want to be able to connect to that network. So if I click East VNet 1, I'm going to go ahead and connect to that guy. And I'm just going to go ahead and kill that connection here for a second. And if I go to remote desktop, this is that IP address. So I'm now on my machine. So I'm actually, this machine is connected to the Microsoft network, but I'm now also connected to that private network that I created in the cloud. And yeah. So this is the IP address of that server that's running in the East data center. And I'm going to access it by its private IP address. And lo and behold, I get prompted for credentials, and I can log into that guy using his private IP address. So this is actually, you know, from my laptop, you know, again, connecting to that machine, not by his public IP address, by his private IP address. This allows customers to have really good control over, you know, network access policies and not have to worry about exposing, in this case, RDP port, you know, publicly over the internet.
Right. Because you're doing it all through the VPN.
That's right. Yep. Yeah.
And that goes for just about anything that you need, right? So you don't have to worry about configuring a firewall or sharing ports or making sure the right thing's open.
That's correct, yeah.
At least not until you get to the data center.
That's right, yep. Yep, so the virtual private network, the point-to-site virtual private network, I've actually created here in the East data center. So I can see here that I've actually clicked this checkbox. So my machine is actually going to get an address in this pool. So if I actually, you know, check out, do an IP config, I should actually see, you know, 10.0.0.4. And remember, I stated earlier that IP addressing in Azure always starts with a .4, you know, instead of .0, you know, 1, 2, or 3. So my machine actually has an IP address in that range.
Yeah. Yeah, your local machine should have an IP address as well. Is that what
yes.
we're talking about?
Yeah. I'm sorry. Yeah, if that wasn't clear, that was a PowerShell command on my local machine. This is actually my local machine here. And you can see this is actually, you know, details for that.
Yes, so you've got a Corpnet address above that, and then.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So yeah, this is my, you know, private IP address that I've got that you know, I'm sitting behind a NATed firewall also.
Yeah, that's cool. That's really cool.
Yeah, so I mean, you can imagine the possibilities. I mean, you know, we talked about is a fairly complex configuration, but it is easily facilitated through the number of tools we have in the Azure portal. And there's a lot of, you know, pretty cool things customers can do. I mean, if you think about the hybrid situation, customers can actually put a directory controller in Azure. And let's say that their primary data center and their, you know, Contoso, you know, headquarters goes down. By virtue of them having a directory controller running in Azure that would have already had all that, you know, the objects replicated to it, they could actually allow their users to, you know, VPN into Azure and actually use that as a backup site or stand up those services and you know, in Azure that they might have sitting in like a dehydrated state to be able to work as a you know, backup or disaster recovery site. So lots of cool things you can do with it.
Yeah, and I see lots of other applications as well, right? You know, some company has a lot of small, tiny little sites, you know, like, I don't know, somebody that has a chain of stores, maybe. And so, you know, they set up a DC locally in the store, and then that DC just replicates over to, you know, their large data center, which is actually Azure hosted.
Exactly, so, yeah.
all sorts of possibilities there. That's really cool.
So there's one final thing I want to show you. So now we have everything in Azure, and you know, one thing that comes to mind is, you know, how do you back this stuff up? So you know, I actually have in here. There's some features that is called Azure Backup, and I'm going to go ahead and go down here, Recovery Services. So I've actually created this backup vault. So this is actually a container. This is sitting in Azure Storage. Azure Storage is an incredibly inexpensive location to actually house data. You know, that's actually it's a powerful feature of Azure, but it also happens to be a very cheap feature of Azure. So you know, it's inexpensive for customers to use it to store SQL backups or machine backups in this case. So I actually go in here to registered items and give it a moment here to think. I actually had pre-registered my directory controller as a server that I've enrolled in this, participated in this Azure network or Azure backup capability. So I can actually, I have scheduled backups that are actually, you know, backing up some folders on a C drive directly into Azure Storage. So again, you know, my server's in Azure, but now all of my disaster recovery and backup restoration features are in Azure also. And I shouldn't have disconnected. I'm going to go ahead and reconnect to this machine here and show you that it's really straightforward and easy. There's actually a client that you download onto that local machine. So go ahead and close this out. And I'm connecting back to my directory controller here. And give it a moment here to think. You see, this is another advisable thing. I have this listening on port 4389, not 3389. You should, you know, make sure if you open up Remote Desktop publicly, you know, that's a common attack vector that people might try to compromise your machine with. So it's good to use some other port. So on here, I have this client, Windows Azure Backup. And I'm going to load that guy up. And I have a backup job that I actually ran a little bit before our show started here, and I can go in here to hit backup now. I can actually schedule a backup to actually back up my entire machine or back up certain folders. So this machine is actually backing up at 8:30 a.m. every day directly into Azure Storage. So you don't have to worry about tapes. You don't have to worry about, you know, disk to disk backup. It's really simplified here for you.
Pretty easy to restore a backup as well, I assume?
Oh, yeah. Yep, absolutely. So I just, you know, simply going in here to one of my previous backups, and I can actually, you know, hit the recover data from it.
Wow. Yeah, that's pretty neat.
So, and pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you know, we talked about a lot of stuff, and I think it's, you know, it's important to note that, you know, some of this stuff might be perceived to be, you know, complicated or certainly new maybe to a lot of customers. You know, we have lots of assistance and hands that we can lend to customers through Microsoft Services, you know, Premier Support and Microsoft Consulting to be able to help customers get up to speed any of this or to even build out this infrastructure. We want to make sure that customers do it in a way that's supportable and that they're ultimately successful with. You know, we don't want customers to be, you know, floundering or fumbling through any of this.
Yeah, absolutely. Is there a good place to go just for customers to read up on stuff?
Yeah, I'll give you some links that you can put in the show notes. But Azure.com actually has loads of resources across every one of the products we talked about today. And a lot of the articles on Azure.com points to very technical articles on, you know, pardon the pun, but TechNet or MSDN.
Yeah. So any depth, right? Somebody that just needs to skim the surface, they can find information there. Somebody that really wants to deep dive can find information as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, what I just showed you with the networking, you know, I know I walked through a lot of that stuff and you know, you saw a lot of IP addresses and things that I clicked on and bounced around with. There actually is a good guide that shows you step by step. The customer wants to set that up and experiment with, you know, that type of configuration themselves. It's something I think it might have taken me about a half hour, 45 minutes to do.
Awesome. Yeah, and that's really cool that we've got a guide. That'll make things a lot easier for people.
Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah. All right. Well, listen, thank you so much for showing us this. I really want to have you back and let you do an Azure as a service show for us so that we can see kind of how that works and how that gets set up, et cetera.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we focused a lot on infrastructure as a service. It's a lot easier to talk to, but there's a lot of other things you can do with applications, even non-Microsoft applications, Java, PHP. You know, and we support, are very embracive of the open source community.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, thanks again, man.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you.
Yeah, guys, that's your Taste of Premiere.